Welcome to the OEMs Blockers and Breakthroughs podcast, brought to you by Partful. I am your host, Tanya Tran, Partful Head of Marketing. With me is my co-host, Sam Burgess, CEO of Partful. We're here to share real stories from real companies and real people to help OEMs overcome challenges and be amongst those most forward-thinking teams. It's our very first podcast episode, recorded right here in the heart of a bustling, thriving company. You might hear a few unexpected background noises, but don't worry, it's all part of the charm of our journey into the world of podcasting. Think of it as the audio equivalent of blooper reels in movies. We promise we're working tirelessly behind the scenes to refine our podcasting skills, so future episodes will be smoother and quieter. Until then, join us in this delightful and slightly noisy adventure. Today joining me, we have Stanton Green and also Matt Robinson, our members of the board. I'm going to give you a bit of time to introduce yourself. Would you like to go first, Mark?
Sure. My name's Mark Robinson. I'm chairperson of Partful and investor advisor on behalf of Par Equity. Par Equity are an investor in high-growth tech businesses founded in 2008 in Edinburgh. I'm actually a recycled entrepreneur, I think, because Par invested in my company and now I'm chairing Partful. So I'm happy to be supporting them on their journey.
It's how I come around circle.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Thank you. Stanton, would you like to go next?
Sure. Stanton Green. I'm part of the investment team at Bloomberg Capital. We also invested in Partful. I come at it similar to Mark as an entrepreneur and operator, having done that for a number of years with several different companies. Bloomberg is a global venture capital firm with offices in San Francisco, New York, Tel Aviv, and Miami. We tend to make early investments and then get very involved in the businesses, or at least try to help the entrepreneurs in their journeys as they're usually small and in need of resources. Bloomberg's on our fifth fund, a $225 million vehicle, and we've fortunately been very successful through the years. Thanks.
Brilliant. Thank you, Stanton. So this is the first episode of our OEMs, our Blockers and Breakthrough podcast series. Our first episode, we will be talking about and sharing stories about our origin, Partful origin story, and what problems and challenges we are trying to solve for the industry. So let's get straight to it then. I've got a few questions for you, Sam. I've asked you these questions a lot of times already, but if you would like to share the story of how you came up with the idea of Partful, what motivated you, and basically the story behind our mission.
Yeah, sure. So I guess it's an opportunity for me to swing my lantern again. So, Partful, I was in the army for a long time, and I was not a mechanic, I was an operator. And as an operator, we were tasked to go out of the gate and carry out a specific mission, whatever that might be. And at the point of leaving the camp, something would always go wrong, whether it be a vehicle or some optics, something would always break. Then take that back to the beamy, back to the mechanics. Usually put them under a huge amount of pressure to get the equipment back up and running as quickly as possible, and often blame them for the reason for the failure. And in many cases, not all, but in many cases, it wasn't their fault. And it was due to this big void, this gap of information between the original equipment manufacturer, the OEM, and the end user community. And that gap is pervasive across all industries, not just defense. So, as I was leaving the military, I got a job within City Street as a consultant with advising and designing through life support and after sales solutions for big OEMs like Chrysler and General Dynamics. And I was then introduced to immersive technologies and 3D technologies. And it was a real light bulb moment for me. I saw just how much impact that they could have. I previously had been the guy in a field with a big manual, trying to find a part for a truck that bore no resemblance to the actual manual that I had, and getting rained on, and the pages starting to stick, And when I saw the power of immersive technologies, I knew that was the answer right there. That would have solved about 90% of my problems when I was in the army.
That's brilliant. I know you mentioned Rini a couple of times, and I'm not sure for what reason I didn't ask you what it was or what it was short for.
Yeah.
But, well, actually, it is short for. I'm not sure if Martin Stanton know. I don't know. It's for my benefit and listeners as well.
So within the British Army, you have different corps. And the REME is the Royal Electrical Mechanical Engineers. So that's where all the mechanics and the vehicle mechanics. I was at times in the Royal Engineers, and we used to build bridges and blow things up.
Brilliant. You live and you learn. Stanton, Matt, have you got any stories, or can you relate with anything that Sam just told? Have you had any experience with the British Army at all?
No, I think when I think about Parkville, you know, maybe one helpful comment here is that across lots of sectors now, OEM type companies are trying to get a direct relationship with their consumers and make that relationship intelligent and two-way and fruitful over many years. And that experience that Sam just talked about was quite a dislocated relationship, one-way relationship. And so moving from that world into a connected world is attracted by this business, I think, and that's part of where Sam comes from and where the vision is for the business, and executing on that vision to be much more intelligent in terms of how we keep these pieces of kit upright and productive and adding value.
Yeah.
I think that kind of raised my curiosity about your time in the army. You mentioned you joined the army since you were 16, right?
Yeah.
Did you start straight away as an equipment operator, or?
Oh no! So back then it was an apprenticeship, and they were running apprenticeships in the army. So I started off as an apprentice, and within the Royal Engineers, you have training streams, and the idea being that they fast track you into your trade to give you more longevity, a longer career within the army. So I started life off as a surveyor, actually. When I started on the surveyor course, they gave me pencils and rulers to do surveyor drawings, and I can't draw. I mean, I'm like the worst drawer in the world. And I was just like the worst surveyor. I was so bad. There was a rule that they had, that four mistakes and you had to start again. And I would, we had a girl who was on my course who was exceptional. And at four mistakes, he would start again. So I would wait for him to make his fourth on his first go. Take his work, make more mistakes so it was believable that it was my work, and then hand that in. And that's how I got through that. So yeah, surveying is not my forte.
Hey, Tanya, you asked about stories. And I just want to relate kind of two things. One is that growing up, I worked in a tractor company for a couple summers, and it always struck me that mechanics, so this was a Ford dealership, Kubota, they serviced, John Deere had a separate, but occasionally you get a John Deere coming in or something like that. But the mechanics were all these, you know, elderly gentlemen that had all this knowledge in their head. And their parts and instructions books were paper on a workbench with oil on them and things like that. And we watched the transformation of those to go to microfiche. And then the transformation, the technology transformation, was basically taking that same book and just putting it on the internet. So as Sam and I were talking about these things, he looked at that and said, that's exactly right. My family operated a very large cattle ranch in Colorado. And so I spent a lot of time growing up around tractors and equipment. And it was everything from small equipment, so chainsaws, up to four-wheelers, up to, you know, pretty large, enclosed tractors. And you realize that in places like that, especially in the United States, a lot of those instruments are remote, very, very remote. And there's no local Ford dealer or John Deere dealer close by. So the question in today's world, how do you help the local, you know, and sometimes it's a, you know, piece of excavation equipment or farming equipment. How do you help them find the parts and services they need for their specific instrument. And it's a super complicated world, and you know that that world has changed, and certainly Samson is bringing a solution to that, you know, in all kinds of different instruments, cars, automobiles, farm equipment, tractor equipment, aerospace, et cetera, et cetera.
Amazing. That's great. I think the similarities between experiences that you had, Stanton, across the pond, and experiences that you had as well, Sam, in the British Army, it's amazing that, you know, two people from thousands and thousands of miles away experience the same thing with the OEMs as well. I think that leads me to my next question, which is, can you tell us exactly the story, how you came up with the Partful idea and 3D technology?
Yeah, sure. So during my investigation, I was introduced to the original, right at the start, the original thought was to use immersive technologies for training, and that was the original thought process. So I did a huge amount of research in trying to understand how people use these immersive technologies, how people create these models, and how they're then used within industries. It was a real fact-finding mission that I went on. And there was a moment where I saw a video of a repair instruction, and it was just obvious that actually, you know, the so what of a repair is the actual physical part. And I remember saying at the time, I was like, if we could somehow link that this video to a database with parts information that can then capture the supply chain information, that's how we change industry almost overnight. So, and that was the start, but that was the real light bulb moment. So we sort of hopped from what was originally a thought around training, using immersive technology for training, into the parts catalog world, and then the supply chain management and the e-commerce capabilities. And then we set off on a road of trying to develop that. The training element was never really left us, because once you have a 3D model that's hosted, an accurate 3D model of an asset in the cloud, and then it opens up a huge amount of other opportunities, and one of those is, as you know, work instructions. And delivering work instructions through that medium enables that learning in the flow of work, the ability to access accurate information at the point of need, and then enable you then to carry out whatever task it is, because you've got a 3D step-by-step animation that allows you to follow them really easily.
That's great.
I think the other theme here that's worth noticing, we've already talked about delivering into the hands of the OEMs opportunities to empower their consumers. But we've got the ability to unlock a load of really important data that exists in these businesses. You know, the CAD data, the engineering design data, all of these specifications. It's hard work getting this data accurate and with a certain level of integrity. But that data can get unlocked by the stuff that Partful does and delivered into the hands of the consumers as well, and empowers them. So, and that's another like key asset here, I think, that we should remember. And I speak as a data guy. Mm. You know, unlocking the power of data to be intelligent in a way that you haven't been able to in sectors before.
Yeah.
Is transformational, I think, and something that will become normal, in quotes, over time, rather than, you know, unusual, which is it's an exciting place to be.
Mm, for sure.
So, yeah, Tanya, I totally agree with Mark. I mean, every industry we look at is transforming itself, and the data that comes out of that helps managers and businesses do a better job and kind of own their ecosystem a little better. You know, certainly even, you know, I know we've talked about this even before that from our perspective. When we think about the after sales market, so the after sales market is a massive market and typically a plurality of revenues for large OEMs. And I'm talking about car dealers and things of that sort. And it's all in their K-1s and publicly financial statements. They usually talk about the cool F-150 or the new EV. You know, it's not like they're talking about part sales, right? But that's not the sexy part, but it's huge. And those large OEMs have done a very good job over the years to kind of control that because they see the value of it. The disadvantage that smaller OEMs have, mid-size and smaller OEMs, is that it's a razor thin, thinner budgets, thinner margins, and their ability to kind of go build out that ecosystem is just harder. I mean, when you think about the customer journey, if they come in and they buy a instrument, a chainsaw, a four-wheeler, a skidoo, whatever it might be, you know, their touch point with that company is episodic. It's a one-time buy it, and then the next time they buy another one. And those companies don't typically have a lot of opportunities to interact with their customer. And what Partful does, apart from all the things we're talking about, is it really helps those brands and those consumers have a more consistent touch point with that brand through parts. I mean, the parts is huge because there's always, you know, you need a new part, something breaks, and not the consumer's fault. I mean, things get worn down. But by allowing the brand to own that journey a little bit more and own that revenue stream through potentially an e-commerce aspect is a huge opportunity for these brands and for, you know, for sales for these companies, right? For these sales managers to get out and build their brands and build customer loyalty. So not only, you know, Mark's totally right, but there's a whole other aspect also about how we, you know, there's an additional help to the brands and these OEMs to improve their customer loyalty and customer journey. So we're super excited about that. We think there's a ton of upside. We haven't even talked about the e-commerce piece as much and things of that sort. But these are huge markets and big opportunities where Partful is helping these OEMs.
Yeah, I was going to ask as well, is that just to follow up on what you've just said there, Stanton, and also Mark, that this is the huge opportunity, not just for Partful, but for the original equipment manufacturing industry as well. What are the pain points and the challenges that you have seen from the point you joined the Army, working as an equipment operator, you as investors, and also from your personal experiences as well? What are the common kind of blockers, challenges, and pain points that you see most OEMs experiencing?
So for me, it's around access to information. You know, Mark alluded to it before about the OEMs investing a huge amount of time and money in building these amazing digital twins, these CAD models, with all the right information. But currently, without Partful, the technology isn't there really for anybody else to access it outside of that organization. Mm-hmm. So, and that's really been the frustration that I've encountered all the way through, is the inability to access information at the point that I've needed it. And whether that be a part number or the right part number for that particular truck, or whether that be a work instruction, the lack of access to that just causes a huge amount of frustration and confusion on the ground, and money and time. You know, if you're wasting time waiting for parts to be sent that are ultimately going to be the wrong parts because the documentation is wrong, or if you're now repairing something badly because you don't have the correct knowledge or information on how to assemble something again, then it just it can be hugely costly to both the OEM and the morale of the people that are supposed to be doing that job.
It seems like there's quite a big layer of inefficiency in the way things are done, at least historically.
Yeah.
There's a bit of guesswork involved in getting the right part. Sometimes you guess wrongly and you have to start again. Sometimes it can be manipulated into a solution. What we're solving here ultimately, I think, is time.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if there's fleets of equipment or it's an individual consumer, mm-hmm. it's saving people's time, and time is the most valuable commodity of all. So getting that level of precision and knowledge and intelligence into the process, as we said before, by unlocking this data and putting it into the hands of the end users via the OEMs, it's really what we're achieving here. Whereas, you know, the consumers have been working in a world where it's more obscure, it's harder, it's a little bit more clunky, and oftentimes the outcomes aren't that satisfactory.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we're providing, you know, a safety valve and unlocking huge opportunities. And that's why I say, you know, we're strengthening the relationship between the end consumer and the OEM through our good works, because it's just a much more natural conversation It's a much more intelligent conversation because it's powered by the data that's already available in the business. We're surfacing that data. And that means that it's appropriate, it's longer lasting. You know, the brand will look to the world much more capable, much more long-term. It does tremendous things for the way the brand's thought about in the marketplace. And, you know, that is the gold dust here.
That's great. You mentioned the lack of access to data, Sam. Why do you think there's a lack of access to data?
I think the evolution of interaction really describes this well. Mm-hmm. And the evolution of interaction talks around at what point different technologies become accessible to the masses. And up until recently, the software hasn't been good enough, the connectivity hasn't been good enough, and the hardware hasn't been good enough. And we're seeing that change almost on a daily basis at the moment. So going back 20 years, you know, there was no way that OEMs were able to connect digitally with the end users in the same way that we were able to do that today.
I think culturally as well, something interesting is happening in that there's now a bridge in these businesses, which is mainly what Parkful provides, a bridge between the very technical people that are creating the CAD and doing the designs and who's setting up the production lines, and the front end of the business, the sales guys and the marketing guys, where there may not have been a strong connection before, that connection then is facilitated by Parkful, the data, the 3D models, and that sort of interface. So there's like common ground for these very different teams within businesses now to talk to each other about solving the end consumers, your challenges, issues, that sort of thing.
I think as well, I can say one more thing. There's an expectation now that these things should be in place. You know, we're all, it's not no longer just the younger generation. There's, you know, when we sit at a desk and we need an answer to something, we all Google it. You know, we lean on that digital connected capability all the time. So there's an expectation that there's always an answer there. So when you're doing a repair task or you want to find a part information, when you can't find it, it becomes really frustrating because in every other aspect of your life, you are able to do that. But for the reasons we've discussed, the after-sales market just hasn't caught up with that yet. And that expectation is now changing from the consumers, and that will then in turn put pressure on the OEMs in order to transform and put that connectivity in place.
I think that's interesting. It's kind of circle back to the point where Stanton mentioned the bigger, the more flashing OEMs out there who seem to have this problem already solved for them. My experience is since I joined Parkful and I saw the software and I actually looked at the free demo on the website and I said, this is amazing, it's revolutionary. And I was just thinking it'd be so simple for me as a marketer, it'd be simple like Canva, for example. I'm not sure if you've heard of Canva, but basically you upload your brand kits and you would be able to design anything you want and any piece of content you want. And for me, a design of a model or equipment, it would be similar to like a design of like a video or a brochure. And when I actually joined the team experience and actually listened to hundreds and hundreds of call recordings and also sat in a lot of discovery calls with potential clients as well and OEMs, it was surprising for me to hear that their teams are still using Excel sheets and PDFs, 2D drawings, and also paperback, kind of the flip book. I'm not sure if Stanton, you know Argos, which is like a supermarket chain here in the UK where you go in and actually they give you a book and then you actually flip and choose your items on there and you go to the cashier counter and you actually buy from the counter that way. And it's similar like that with the manufacturers here globally as well. They're facing the same problem with their after sales. And it was shocking to me to like actually experience that. I think my question is, you know, Matt, you mentioned inefficiency as well. And to Stanton, you mentioned data as well as Sam, you mentioned data. Do you think there's a bigger issue or kind of a legacy issue behind it with regards to data that's kind of stopping or preventing it becoming this barrier for OEMs to move forward?
Yeah, I think what we're seeing now is really interesting, because, as you said, Tanya, you suspect that the big guys have invested in this and have started to solve it. And that, I don't actually think that that's true. What we see is newer companies, more modern companies, having good CAD data that, you know, is kept well, is integrated together. And these businesses are generally only being opened the doors a few years. They're fairly nimble, they're fairly small in size, and actually they can adopt these technologies relatively quickly. So we've got a lot of early adopters moving quickly now. And also, you know, this then becomes a bandwagon that the market jumps on, because it goes from being unusual, and I think it's been unusual in the past, to being a necessity. And we're right at that tipping point where it's, you got to have this stuff or else you're behind the curve. You're losing revenue opportunities. You're not building strong relationships with your end consumers. Your brand is suffering. And I think that we're at a really interesting tipping point now, where we've proven that this is not like a nice to have anymore. It's essential for the good conduct of your business. But it's concentrating on the data now in a way that perhaps they haven't before, to that extent around the whole of the business.
So Tanya, I'll make two comments. The first one is, as you're talking about grocery store chains, and it's probably appropriate, there's a grocery store chain in the United States called Piggly Wiggly. You wouldn't have known it. Most people in the States don't know it because it's not around as much anymore. But they were the ones that invented the push cart, the shopping cart, the lanes for checkout, and then the aisle, you know, that you went through to actually check out. Before that, it was, you walk to a store, there's a person behind the counter, and you said, I want this, and they kind of put it all in a bag for you. That was a real innovation back then. That innovation is sort of what we're talking about. These seem like, in hindsight, simple innovations. But, you know, that's sort of, we're talking about these innovations of just process and workflow. And I agree with Mark, we're seeing the precipice of that. But the kind of the corollary to that is an observation that we have at Blumberg, which is that industries, in order to make those transformations, have to be what I think of as tech forward, meaning the people have to be tech forward. And what's happened a lot of times is managers in businesses don't have a full appreciation for the technologies and what they can do for them. It's not anybody's fault. It's just that's not the process in which they grew up in. And so you need to see a transformation within the industry and an acceptance in the industry to use technology and see the opportunities that it gives a business or an ecosystem or an industry. And we're certainly seeing that now. And I agree with Mark, it becomes almost table stakes. It's a must have. And those companies are recognizing they can't develop this technology and they're not the experts at developing this technology in-house. So they have to turn and rely on firms like Partful and partner with firms like Partful in order to, you know, kind of stay on the cutting edge for their customers.
That's great. I think we can kind of summarize some of the pains and challenges that on a high level, on an overarching level, that OEMs globally are facing, which pertain to data as well as their outdated processes that they're still using Excel sheets and PDFs, especially the smaller OEMs. And like Mark, you said earlier, the big OEMs still haven't got this solved as well because of the legacy issues that they're carrying after decades of operating in the same way in the status quo. I would be interested to go into like the stories, if you've got any stories that you want to tell our listeners about some of the cases that you worked on. For example, it's unbelievable that we've talked to over 400 OEMs globally at this point so far in the powerful history. So I bet there's a lot of kind of like stories that you want to tell, like case studies or certain OEMs that you've spoken to that kind of you remember from your memory, Sam, that really shows that these pains and issues exist and very, very real and really impacting them.
I mean, yeah, for sure. We've spoken to some of the biggest organisations in the world, and some of the smallest organisations in the world, and the challenges are still the same. The challenges are around frustrations over losing parts revenue. So because they're not able to connect with their user community, they're losing parts revenue to non-OEM parts, and it's a huge issue for them. And certainly with the profitability around parts and the relative ease with which you can generate revenues through parts, through the aftermarket industry, to be losing out on that revenue is hugely frustrating and damaging to these organisations. And they're desperate to change that. From a consumer perspective as well, the consumers generally want to buy the OEM part because they've just invested a lot of money in an asset to do a particular job, and to fit a non-OEM aftermarket part to that asset then compromises that part as well. So it devalues the purpose in spending all that money in the first place. So on both sides of the fence, there's frustration. We hear that every time we have a call, that is the same thing that comes up, this frustration that they can't connect, they can't communicate with each other. And also, I think as well, it's worth mentioning about the competitiveness of the market. This, again, is something that we're hearing, and we're talking more and more to chief marketing officers and people of that role, because those people are seeing Partful as a real differentiator in the market. You know, organisations that are looking at Partful to help leverage their attitude to the after sales and the through life support of the assets. And they are taking it seriously, and here is an innovative technology for you to get the most out of your asset, and it's a real differentiator in the market.
Always remember that, like, it's the anecdotes that are most meaningful sometimes in these things. And when Sam was pitching the Partful business to Parr and Bloomberg as investors, he was talking, you might remember, about having an expensive jet wash machine and it breaking down for the want of a very small part that you struggled to find out what it was and then buy one.
Yeah.
And this couple of hundred pounds worth of machine was sitting in your garage not being used because, of a £2 part that you couldn't get your hands on for whatever reason.
Yeah.
And everybody's got stories like that about wasted opportunities or wasted investment or spend on that sort of kit. And it's those problems that we're solving. And there's hundreds every day, thousands, millions every day of people having these issues. And imagine if we were solving the majority of those day in, day out, it'd be transformational entirely.
What? If I may, Mark, I think it's a great point. And, I'd forgotten about that story, but it's a really good one. And I had something, I've been meaning to get replaced, and I took the piece off and I called around and people were like, oh yeah, come in and we can have a custom fit. And you can't find it. And it was very frustrating. I was like, well, what does it cost? And they're like, well, it costs you $150, $200. Now, maybe a lot of people in the United States can't afford an extra $200 to repair a small piece. I looked at it and I thought that was crazy. The part probably costs, I don't know, a dollar. It's dropping out two screws and dropping two screws back in. It's super easy. And I wound up tracking down the original manufacturer who's out west. And I told the woman, I finally got the parts department. I told her what was going on. She goes, oh yeah, we know that's kind of a faulty part. I'm going to send you one for free. And I got it 3 days later. I took the screws out, dropped it right back in. Perfect. But the point is that for most of people in the UK or the US, they can do those simple things. And all they just need is the part, but it's almost impossible to find them. And Mark, it's a great example. And to say, it's funny, I just had one this month that I didn't think about. But, the fact that, I now had the original manufacturer now had an interaction with me, the consumer. They had my address. They knew my name. They put me in the database. They knew another faulty part that they needed to send out. They were able to kind of, I'm sure, do work on making that better. Had I gone to this third party, they wouldn't have used the manufacturer's part. They would have customized it and then cut it down, and they would have made the money on the labor. And the OEM would have never known that I was involved. And that happens hundreds of thousands, millions of times every day with multiple parts around the globe. It's a really good reminder, the story about the Sam's cleaning.
at the sharp end.
Yeah.
That's where I get serious.
Yeah.
I think for me, it's about the camera. I had a Sony DSLR, which I bought from Sony themselves from the website. Not long after that, being the really clumsy person that I am, I put my camera in my backpack. It was years and years ago when I was still in uni. And I went to the supermarket, got a can of condensed milk, opened it at my friend's house, put it back in my backpack, didn't pack it properly. It basically spilled all over my camera bag and went into my camera. So my camera stopped working. But because I was so very poor back then, I tried to open it out and try to fix it. And I identified that there was a chip that was basically drenched in condensed milk. And it was so sticky, I couldn't wash it, because if I washed it, it would have been even more broken. So I tried to go on Sony's website to try and find the chip to replace for that one. I couldn't find it anywhere. There was nothing on their website that referred to parts, or a website that I could purchase a part from. And it was because it was out of warranty, I couldn't do anything about it. So I didn't give up. I went on eBay and actually spent 3 days looking for the replacement part. And I finally found a similar one to that. But because the series number was a bit different, it was a bit of a newer model, I took the risk and I bought it anyways. It cost me about 50 quid. I bought it and I replaced it and it worked, but it stopped working about 5 months after that. And it shouldn't have stopped, because it was the right part. It shouldn't have stopped.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I just don't know how to fix it now, because it's just sat there in under my desk, like forgotten. And I said, what a clumsy person I am. I'm not going to buy another camera because it's cost so much and there's no way to fix it. So there you go, Sony, you lost a customer now. I could have been a very loyal customer, but you lost me now. So I think that case really, and it literally cost me so much time, took me so much time to try and fix it, to end up losing it 5 months.
Well, with your perseverance, Tanya, you know, that's a big effort to come to, to come to nothing.
Yeah.
I bet you're more careful with condensed milk now in your...
Yeah, well, definitely. No more, because I'm vegan now. I don't drink dairy anymore, so that's a plus.
Is that the reason you're vegan?
Probably, that's one of the factors. But yeah, I think anyone, you know, anywhere in the world can relate to a story like that. And I think, you know, I'm not going to name any name or any company, but I've been here at Partful for 6 months, worked on a few deals so far. And what amazed me was that one time there was one prospective customer who manufactured go-karts. And for some reason, their departments are very, very fragmented. So they only designed a couple of their models, and the rest of their models were designed by an external agency, which then led to them not owning their own IP. And when they wanted to sign with us, it was very difficult, and they realized that they should have owned their own data, because it was owned by another agency. They could not buy it, they could not use it. And I think this is the mistake that a lot of the smaller OEMs out there are making, in terms of just only thinking a bit short term rather than long term, thinking that they have an idea of a product, but they don't have the resources to design it. They'll hire someone to design the model, they'll get the CAD manufactured in-house because they have a factory. And then all they think about is selling new products, rather than thinking that, well, now the products are out there, people, parts might be breaking, people might want to buy them from me. Now, what do I do? And they actually sell all the parts with an Excel sheet with all the parts listed on there, as well as a PDF 2D drawings. Their revenues are in the millions, and basically they're short-staffed and they don't have enough people to service all of the part orders that come in. Also, they're struggling with part misidentification because they've got a dealership globally, and because of language barriers, it's really, really difficult to service a dealership that big at that scale with only two members of after sales staff specialists. And I think this is the problem that a lot of smaller OEMs out there are facing. And I think there's an educational piece that needs to be done, or how do we kind of transition these OEMs to a more forward-thinking mindset in terms of strategic and long-term planning rather than the instance that I've just told.
Yeah, I think there's an interesting opportunity, and Parkville is already, I think, doing a really good job of, you know, leading this conversation in the industry about the recognition about how much your data is an asset in the business, not just for now, but for the long-term future of the business. Mm-hmm. What are good practices around data in terms of data robustness, data access, data security, integrity? All these practices that are, you know, very common, I think, in places like banking and finance, they will start to live within the OEM world. And you can see roles like chief data officer and people like that coming along sometime soon, because the realization, as we've been talking about, that your data is your way of having intelligent relationships with your end consumers. It's the only way, really, of doing that intelligently and efficiently. That means that there does need to be some investment in that ecosystem and in that environment to unlock the data. So more and more, this will be a common topic of conversation. I think at, you know, events and conferences and blogs and podcasts like this, just in terms of the industry getting good at good data practices.
Yeah. I think I can say another thing on your point there, Tanya, before. It's called designing for supportability, and this is something that I've seen firsthand so many times where, and I've been in it, when an organization is taking a new product to market, the focus is all around getting it built, all the various different design freezes you've got to go through. You're under so much time and pressure. You're recruiting assembly line staff that all need to start building at the right time. Your supply chain demands, so many things going on. To add another layer, designing for supportability for some organizations is just too much to deal with. But it's a short-term view, because ultimately, as soon as you start rolling equipment out of the gate, out of your manufacturing line, and they're going to service, if your support solution isn't tip-top, then it's going to cost you reputational damage, it'll cost you in revenues as well, and through the examples we've already talked about. It's a big challenge, and I think there's not enough understanding as to the benefits or the downsides around not having a good design for supportability solution in place.
Yeah. Stanton, do you have anything else to add to that?
I guess the one thing I would say is, when we think about sales, an OEM kind of strategy, you know, there's an individual that thinks about this life cycle with the customer. How does a parts and labor book improve their customers' lives and potentially their e-commerce business? The data side is sometimes different, and sometimes a different audience within the company, right? But those are different people that are thinking about, how do I take in data? So I think for us, there's a couple of different constituents within our customers' firms that we help, right? It's the online sales manager helping sell more products, helping the marketing people have more of a consistent journey with their customer. Forward-looking people in technology and data obviously brings all the benefits we've talked about. So sometimes it's being mindful of who the audience is, right?
And possibly Stanton connecting those worlds as well, right?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that happens in every industry over time. I totally agree, Mark.
That's great. That brings me to my next segue, which is, now we've identified all of the challenges and issues that the industry is facing, from the world's smallest OEM to the biggest OEMs. How does our mission here at Parkville align with the OEMs, leaders, goals, and objectives. Can you explain that in a few words?
Yeah, sure, yeah. I'm not sure I'll do it in a few, but I will do it nonetheless. So we're digitalizing the aftermarket, you know, providing that bridge between the OEM and the end user community. And that aligns in so many ways to all our customers. That everyone has, the digitalization has been a thing for a number of years now, and organizations are scrambling to get on board the digitalization train, certainly post-COVID. COVID really sort of identified a lot of inadequate digitalization strategies, and lots of organizations were like fumbling around. And our platform really does provide that bridge between the OEM and the end user community. I think as well, when you also start looking at talking about paperless engineers and the environmental impact of some of the of our platform as well, by reducing the need for paper-based publications, reducing the need for flights of roving technicians flying around the world, managing and maintaining assets. The mission of Partful is right in line with a lot of OEMs around the world right now.
How do you plan that we can collaborate with the OEMs to make sure that we can help them overcome barriers like their data management and the infrastructure and the legacy issues that they're facing to move towards the digitalization transformation goals?
That's a great question. So education is the first one. We have a gentleman who works with us who's got a long academic career and has taught engineering in universities, and hearing how engineering is taught in universities versus how it's applied in the real world is often a topic of much of fun and sometimes horror. But I think there's a real educational piece. And you said it before, Mark, never before, you know, organisations haven't built their CAD models in the way that they've needed to now, because they never had the benefit of a powerful technology. Now this powerful technology is enabling them to connect with the customers. Then there's a real drive and a real necessity now to get that right. So I think education around that is going to be really key to us to the success.
Yeah, I fully agree with that. And this is why we're on the podcast discussing these issues. I think also a lot of the people tend to stay stagnant with the status quo as long as they don't have to change too much. But I feel like to get ahead of the curve, you'd rather rip out the bandage now and be in pain for a little bit, then you can heal quicker and be basically grow faster as well.
Well, it's disruptive, isn't it? I think that's what, you know, in terms of Power and Bloomberg's investment, that, you know, we are excited by the level of disruption that Partful is invoking in the market, because it just makes sense that businesses are going to move in this direction, you know, better access to data, more intelligent use of data, better relationships with the end consumers. It's got to happen. It's not there yet, but it will happen, and the opportunity with Partful is to fast track that with our clients. And that's why it's a live conversation in the industry, you know, regardless of the OEM and regardless of their status. It's a foot race to get to this level of competency now that we're supporting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tanya, you know, in many businesses, inertia is the biggest competitor, right? The kind of the entrenched workflows that exist out there. And to Sam's point, there's an education that goes through an industry. And as I've said earlier, you need to start to see the individuals within an industry take the reins and want to be what we call tech forward. So they're looking at these technologies and saying, okay, this is the way for the next 20 years for me, the individual, to make more money, because I can help drive more money to the bottom line, find efficiencies, sell more, grow the business, and business owners see that as well. And sometimes that's a process, right? It's things like this, you know, just driving awareness for individuals that are on the line dealing day to day to think about, okay, how can I get to more clients? How do I have a better customer interaction? You know, all those things. But it is inertia a lot of times is our biggest competitor.
Yeah.
I think we've had such a long conversation. It's clear that you, to Mark and Stanton, really believe in our mission as well, and the potential that our tech can disrupt the market and actually bring it forward. which brings back me to the question around our second round of investment, which recently we have just released on the news not long ago. I think within our audience would be some entrepreneurs out there, as well as maybe potential investors who would like to hear more about Powerful and how we basically achieved this second round of investment, and some advice that you want to share with the potential startup entrepreneurs out there, CEOs who are also looking for investments.
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, raising investment is super easy for us. If you just get... I think, obviously, raising investment, it comes with some challenges. It's massively disruptive as well for a CEO perspective, and it does have an impact on the business. I'm not just saying it because Mark is sat next to me, but working with Power and Blumberg has been really enjoyable. You know, we've got, like I first said, the support of two entrepreneurs like Stanton and Mark. Having those guys to call upon has been hugely beneficial with my own growth, my own personal growth. And because being a CEO is a lonely place at times, or a lot of times, it can be quite a lonely place. So having these guys on board, it's been incredible. And right from the outset, right from the first investment round, I remember saying to Stanton, you know, it was a two-way interview process. You know, we're not just looking to just get cash, you know, for cash sake. You know, we were looking to bring in team members, and that was the way in which we approached the investment round. And we were really fortunate that we had the pick of the bunch, really. And Stanton and Par were right at the top of that pick because of the credibility they bring, the experience that they bring, and as humans, they're really easy and good to work with. So but it took me a while to realize that when we went through that first investment round, was that just how important the building the team is. It isn't just about getting the cash, it's about getting the right team on board, because there's a whole bunch of VCs out there, and not all great.
Yeah, and Tony, I'll say that, you know, from our perspective, you're right. We are big believers in the space. We've been doing this for a long time. But one of the important things is, you know, Blumberg has 8 unicorns in our portfolio. We've got $850 million raised. We've got $2.5 billion under management. We've returned another $1 billion to investors. And we're patient. Right. It takes at this early stage a decade sometimes to build companies. Some of our unicorns have, you know, they were in the portfolio for 10 years or more. So talking about this round or future rounds or whatever else, we tend to be very committed to our companies and our entrepreneurs, you know, supportive of them, because we recognize it's a long journey to build this kind of customer loyalty, these types of interactions with your customers. It doesn't happen overnight. It takes, you know, years. So we tend to look at this as, you know, long-term partnerships with our portfolio companies to build great organizations, great companies globally.
Yeah, that's pretty heartfelt for me, because from first investment to exit, Power were with us for 7-8 years, but they give us the freedom to get business under us, and everybody got a good exit. And so that's the motivation here in terms of deploying the capital that, you know, Bloomberg and Power have trusted in you guys.
Yeah.
You know, because there is, you know, there's a big market. It's disruptive what you're doing. It's a subscription business. It's B2B with a C end to it. So a lot of it comes down to the character of the founder and the management team in terms of ability to execute on the plan, on the vision that you've clearly expressed, and then the personal chemistry between, you know, the board, the investors, the management team, Sam as founder. And that's got to work, and that's what we take great care over. And, yeah, you know, we can, you know, Stanton and I can hopefully map our journeys onto Sam's journey, what stage he's at, and see what's coming down the line. We can be prepared for the next phases of the business as we grow.
Yeah.
I think my last question for Sam, and please don't try to appease Stanton and Matt because they're here, but we have now got our funding secured and our team growing, and also our technology is getting even more advanced on a daily basis. Where do you see our company in the next 2 years?
We're on this precipice right now of really taking off. The technology is now at the point that it's that is totally scalable. Marketing and our sales effort, our MQLs are coming in thick and fast. You know, people know who we are now, the rebranding that we did at the start of the year. There's so many positives that have come out over the last, certainly the last 6 months and since this last raise. But where I see ourselves in the next 2 years, you know, we, the ambition is still to be the next Manchester Unicorn. That is absolutely squarely my ambition, and the team are fully aware of that. And everyone's on board with it. And to have not just me, but an entire team of people behind me all pulling in that direction is incredible. So whether we'll get there in 2 years, I'm not entirely sure. But that's the path. And yeah, between now and then, it's just a case of onboarding more customers, keeping them happy. Some of the testimonials that are coming in are incredible. So it's just onwards and upwards, really. More of the same.
That's brilliant. I think with some really good names in our portfolio, like Lotus Cars, Mating, Alert, and also IDEX, we would like to be the go-to after-sales solution for global OEMs. If you want to join us on the journey to become the forward-thinking OEMs and get ahead of the curve in terms of digital transformation, we are the solution for you. I want us to be that, as well as I want us to become the inspirational technology where it brings access or accessible repairing to everyone, not just engineers, not just mechanics, not just dealers, OEM dealers, but also for an engineering net person like myself, can also use Parkpool to fix my own camera someday. So that's kind of like 2C bit that you mentioned there, Max. B2B2C is what we want to be and is what we are. So yeah, I'm not sure if you agree with me, Sam, but
I think you nailed it there, Tony. I think there's, you know, there's the analytics piece as well that we're working on, you know, to complete that infinity circle.
Yeah.
That digitalization of an industry that's been analog for so long, capturing data at the point of change, which will revolutionize the way in which organizations understand how their assets perform once they've been delivered. There are organizations we're working with at the moment that without our platform would have no chance of ever understanding capturing that data, and therefore, you know, the data that runs behind this digitalization solution that we're presenting will be the real game changer over time.
100%. That comes to the conclusion of our podcast episode today. We've identified that the main challenges OEMs facing at the moment are first, outdated processes. So that includes anything from Excel sheets to that they use as BOMs or bill of materials to PDF 2D drawings that they use for the after sales, as well as their customers are going through frustrating manual orders through phones and emails, which can lead to part misidentification as well as misrevenue. The customers can get frustrated, which leads to bad experiences and losing customers down the line. So it's not just losing parts revenue, but that can echo back to their new products revenue as well. So an instance of myself, you know, losing trust from Sony and losing passion for my photography hobby as well, which means Sony have lost a customer in me, and that, I think that not just me, but also other people have experienced the same thing. And also OEMs can also get left behind on regulations as well, such as right to repair and circular economy. The second key takeaway is we've identified that digital transformation, data management, and basically data collection is the key to a growing business. We see that nowadays businesses need data on every aspect of their operation for them to identify risk, growth opportunities. Being blinded to after-sales data can mean that they don't know how their products or equipment are performing. They can lose data on their customers' behaviours and all sorts, which means missing out on growth opportunities in the future. And at the end is that even though there are barriers to OEMs overcoming those, for example, their data management, their CAD, their BOM not in the good state, they can always come to a solution like Parkpool to help them get ahead of the curve. We can take them on a journey, even hand-holding them through every step of the way. Our 3D technology is designed with customers at heart, So not just our customers, but also our OEM's customers as well. From a user experience perspective, we want to solve all of those challenges for the OEMs. And as a head of marketing, I am confident to say, because I've done the research, is that our solution is the only truly interactive 3D explosion after sales platforms out there for parts catalog and work instructions. So thank you, Mark and Stanton, for joining us today. We're really excited to, you know, kick start our podcast journey.
I was just going to say thank you very much, Tanya, for putting this together. It's been great to be with you guys, and a great session. As you know, we're super excited about the company and certainly the journey. So
thank you, Stanton.
Thank you.
Thank you, Stanton.
I'm just going to say the last few words that our second episode will take a deep dive into the pain of after sales customers. From our experience, this is the biggest blocker to OEM's parts revenue. We'll have other guest speakers on the second episode who come from an OEM's background, and also our sales director, Dan Horrocks, will be joining us as well. So please do subscribe and join us in the second episode. Also, follow us on LinkedIn at Partful to see all of our content and value offering tidbits on there, and see you in the next episode. Thank you.